So this sound clip starts on page 17 of lecture 3, and it's of a completely different nature than the previous lectures. And what these pages I'll talk about in this sound clip does is the story about how extreme value statistics can be and was used to handle extreme financial risks, or insurance risks in this case. And the first part of the story, which is what I'll tell you most about, is in the paper by me and Nader Tajvidi, which is in Anslag in Canva. So you can find the paper there, and you should look at it. And the story, a little bit of the story, is on the first page of this, and page 17 of lecture 3, and that you can see a chart, pie chart diagram of the windstorm losses during the time 1982-2005 for Länsförsäkringar. That's the Swedish insurance company which has the biggest exposure to windstorm losses. And of course, this is not one loss, but it's all the losses which are obtained during a single windstorm. And you can see the plot in the pie chart. The majority of the loss is from the windstorm Gudrun in January 2005. And there's lots of windstorms, but this completely dominates. And that makes it difficult for insurance companies to handle it, because usually things go well, and should one really prepare for something going as bad as Gudrun? The loss at the time when we looked at this was from Gudrun was 326 million euros, well, maybe about 3 billion Swedish crowns. And of the loss, 72% was due to forest losses, and the loss caused by Gudrun was 4 times larger than the second largest. And in the plot, or in the picture on the bottom, you can see the real problem. To the left, you have a forest road in Småland, one of the provinces of Sweden. And on the right, you have a picture of how it looked, what it looked like after the windstorm. And so there's quite a lot of value in the wood which are in these forests, and this value was basically destroyed by the windstorm. So the problem is then, well, how much reinsurance should LFA be, Länsförsäkringar AB, buy? And this some of you may know and some of you may not know, but insurance companies have big insurance companies where they buy insurance for. So if you take a Swedish insurance company, say Länsförsäkringar, which is a quite big company, it still doesn't want to carry all the risks, say from windstorm itself. So it buys insurance from a reinsurance company, maybe something called Swiss Re, or there's a number of them. These are huge companies with fantastic amount of money. But just like as for an ordinary person, the question is, how much insurance should one buy? Then for an insurance company, the question is, how much reinsurance should one buy? So that's the main question. And of course, it depends on the price, but also on the risks and what we can contribute by using extreme value statistics is to sort of understand the risks. The costs is a question of negotiation and what you can afford and many other things. So this was the main question. How much reinsurance should LFA be buy? Another question is, should one worry about windstorms losses getting worse? Is there a trend? Does climate change make windstorms more dangerous than they used to be? And then, surely, after a big windstorm, people who own forests will be more likely to buy insurance. And the question is, how should the LFAB adjust its forest insurance portfolio? How should they adjust to its forest insurance portfolio growing? And so, repeating a little bit, can detailed modeling give better, more questions, can detailed modeling give better risk estimates? Are windstorms becoming more frequent? So we'll look at that. So the next page, page 19 of lecture 3, page 19, shows the main results of the analysis we did at a earlier stage, in an earlier date. And that is the paper which you should read, which is a part of the course literature. And the story then was that in, I think, 1993, there was a unprecedentedly large windstorm in Sweden. And this cost LFAB about, I think, 130 million crowns. And it was much, much bigger than the windstorms losses the insurance companies had before. So they were quite worried, and they came to us and asked for advice. How should we think about that? How big are the risks? And what we did was then that we did just what you're told in this course, plus a little bit more. And that is, we looked at the windstorm losses. I think it was the losses which were bigger than 0.8 million. And we got about 60 of those. And we modeled those as with a generalized Pareto distribution. And the block maximum model. So we thought windstorms came as a Poisson process. It won't be homogeneous over the year, but that doesn't matter really, because you think of, it's just that you have, the important thing is that you have a Poisson number extreme windstorms every year. So we did fit the standard black Pixel threshold model to these, whatever, 57 maybe windstorms in the data set, which was the data set from 82 to 93. And we did one more thing I've not talked about before. We wondered whether the losses got bigger. So we let the sigma parameter in the generalized Pareto distribution included trend, and we wrote that not as a linear function but as e to the linear function. So we assumed that sigma t equal to e to the power alpha plus beta t. So alpha and beta were unknown parameters. So instead of one unknown parameter sigma, we get two unknown parameters alpha and beta. And then of course the maximum likelihood method, at once, in the same way as before, gives you estimates, maximum likelihood estimates of alpha and beta. And the parenthesis, why not just let sigma be a linear function? Well, probably wouldn't have mattered much, but it's standard to model it as an exponential instead of a linear function, just because sigmas are scale parameters, they have to be positive, and exponentials always are positive. Okay, so maximum likelihood estimates were as you can see. This is, I should have said it before, it's page 19. I'm looking at the text to the left below the red table. And so the estimates we got was that the constant in the model or the formula for the scale parameter was 0.93, and the estimate of the trend parameter in sigma was 0.013, so it was quite small compared to alpha, to the estimate of alpha, and with a standard deviation of the same size as the estimate. So if you would want to do a test where the sigma equals zero, you would not reject at all. And there really was no evidence of a trend in the extremes in this data set. And this, in fact, seems to agree with what climate science people I've talked with think about climate change in Sweden. They seem to think that windstorms won't get worse. Rainstorms will get worse. And going on, there were earlier windstorms. We had this data set I'm looking at now was from 82 to 93. They were windstorms 1902 and 1969, which were quite big, probably comparable to Gudrun and much bigger than in the data set we had here. But they were not included in the insurance company's data set, so we didn't have access to them. And we didn't think so much about them, even if we knew they were there. Okay, now we had the statistical model, we just got a standard peak zero threshold model because there wasn't any trend. We estimated sigma gamma and the lambda of the Poisson distribution, and from that you can compute the risks. So if you look at the red table, the way we like to present the results was that the risk counted in million Swedish crowns is, if you look at 66, there would be a 10% risk that the biggest windstorm loss next year is bigger than 66 million. There'd be a 10% probability that the biggest loss during the next 5 years would be 215. There'd be a 10% probability that the biggest loss during the next 15 years is 473. Of course, there were then quite substantial statistical uncertainties in these estimates, but these were the estimates. And if you look at bigger risks, so the risk, then you could see that from this, the simple peak zero threshold model, just as you've learned it again, that there's a 1% risk that the biggest loss next year was 366 million. And there's a 1% risk that the biggest loss the next 15 years was bigger than 2,500 million Swedish crowns. And the insurance company quite liked this. They thought this was a good basis to use to think about how much reinsurance they should buy. They were less happy about the plot to the right. This is a plot of the conditional probability that a loss in excess of the reinsurance level, 850 million Swedish crown, exceeds X. So the story was, you remember the biggest loss I forget, but 140 or 180 million crowns in this data. And LFAB had reinsurance up to 850 million Swedish crowns, so they didn't have a problem. But what they could see now is, from this plot, which is a conditional probability that a loss which is larger than 850 million Swedish crowns exceeds the value X, then you could see that if there is a big loss, there is a 50%, maybe 50% chance that it's bigger than 400 million Swedish crowns. So that worried them. The bottom sort of red things says that the loss in Gudrun at the exchange rate at the time was about 3 million Swedish crowns, and it happened 12 years later. So our predictions, what we said about the risk in the red table to top left, seemed very extreme for the insurance company and for people thinking about this. But in reality, they were underestimates. I'll come back to that. Within 12 years, there was something happened which was worse than the 1% 15 years risks. And as I said, the 1902 and 1969 windstorms might have been comparable to Gudrun, but there's no sort of cost data for that. So I come back to this red things on page 19, but first some details about the analysis and some important details which I have not talked about yet. And that's one thing which is you have to do is that you, in the peaks or threshold model, you have to choose a threshold. You have this threshold U coming to you from somewhere. And that is not given to you by anybody. You'll have to choose it on your own. And often one chooses it not just by looking at, as I said, 0.8 million maybe, but instead you say you take the 5% or the 1% largest losses or something like that and let that decide your statistical analysis. So you have somehow to input the U into the analysis. And this is sort of like a fairly standard problem in statistics, in particular in density estimation. And this is that the threshold short, so I'm on page 20, just below the red text, that the choice of the threshold U is a compromise between low bias, that is that the model fits well, and low variance. So low bias is a good fit of the model. By the theory, one expects or hopes that the model would fit better the higher the thresholds, which would mean that one got few order statistics, few observations one used in the modeling. So that is low bias, a good fit of the model. But on the other hand, if you use too high a threshold, you get too few observations. And so that goes the other way around. You want to have low variance, which requires a low threshold, many order statistics. So low bias requires high threshold, low variance requires low threshold, and you have to make a compromise. And there are right now coming out maybe better methods of doing this using sort of formulas, probability analysis, but what is typically done is you look at the data and let that guide the choice of the threshold. And things what you typically use are different kinds of plots, mean excess plots. So you take the excesses over different thresholds, you compute the means and you plot those. Or you do the same thing for the medians. You look at different thresholds, compute the median of the excesses over these thresholds, and plot them. And what one always should do is that you take for each threshold you get a set of parameter estimates and you look at how they vary as a function of the threshold. That's also you can use the standard diagnostic plots from general statistics, QQ and PP plots, which I've talked about before and which sort of shows how well a model, statistical model, fits the data. So to choose a threshold, you use look at perhaps mean excess plots, median excess plots, plots of parameter estimates as a function of the threshold. This you always should do. And in the end, you should surely do a QQ plot. And I've written at the end of page 20, automatic threshold selection procedures exist and are getting better. But still, optimal thresholds depends on the unknown underlying distribution, which has to be estimated. So it's not an easy problem, even if it's a standard one. So the next page, page 21, you see the various plots. First, the windstorms losses for the 1982 to 1993 data, and the excess is over 0.9 million Swedish crowns. Then you have a median excess plot, and you have a QQ up to the top right, you have a median excess plot, and here you plot the horizontal line is gotten from the fitted parameters of the model, and this you can read about and should read about in the Cole's book. You could do a similar thing with the mean excess plot, but the windstorm data turned out to be quite heavy-tailed, and then there's a big variance in the mean excess plots, and they may be less useful. To the bottom right, you have parameter stability plots. So you see there's a plot of how the estimate of the shape parameter depends on the threshold U. This X scale is in million Swedish crowns. And you can see that gamma somehow hovers around 1.2, so it's quite heavy tails. The variance of this distribution doesn't exist. The mean of the distribution doesn't exist either. And you can see maybe that with some goodwill that the plot maybe stabilizes around 4 or something like that. But you could even go further down to 2, and it seemed fairly good. And you can see the variation becomes bigger as you go to the right, which is as is to be expected because you do the estimations with fewer observations when you're further to the right. So you should have a bit bigger variance. And then you do the same thing for the estimate of the scale parameter. But then, as you remember from the computations we've done before, one of the exercises, that the scale parameter changes as you change the threshold, and then to compensate for that, we have not plotted sigma hat, the estimate of sigma as a function of u, but we've plotted sigma hat minus gamma hat times u, which should be a straight horizontal line if the generalized breeder model fits. And maybe still it fits fairly well throughout, at least down to the level 2 millions. And the bottom left is a QQ plot. And all this is, this is described very well in Coles' book, so you should read it. And it's important. If you want to do this in practice, you have to do the threshold selection. Okay, page 22 of lecture 3, some conclusions. What I try to propagate often, and which has not caught on all that well, is that risk cannot be summarized into one number. It's much better to give a table like the one on the previous slide than to just give one number, say the 99% value at risk and the 99% expect a shortfall. And of course, if you want to do regulations, you cannot regulate on a table. If you want to sort of run your company in a good way, you should look at tables or plots. But if you want to regulate, you have to have one number. And so, say, Basel III or Solvency II typically uses value at risk or expected shortfall. And then the next point is extreme value statistics provide the simplest methods, but other methods may sometimes be needed. In the data, we didn't find any clear trends. We did another paper. We tried to see if one could get more information using meteorological data about the wind speeds in various parts of the country during the windstorms. This didn't help. And I don't think, it was not just that we couldn't find any clear connections between wind speeds and the losses. I don't think there are any connections like this. What companies typically do is they do big computer simulation models of windstorms, so they of windstorm losses. So they sort of model all the buildings and all the forests maybe in Sweden, and then they take some sort of invented windstorm, let it blow over the country, and then they have some sort of probabilities of getting a loss given the storm for each building, and then you get windstorm total windstorm loss by adding all these losses. And as far as I could see, these model, there was a big, really a cottage industry starting to do this kind of modeling, and they surely still exist. But I thought they were no good. The connections between wind speeds and losses are just too complex to be caught by these models. And what windstorms you let blow over the country in these simulation models was quite ad hoc. Okay, I'll come back to the next point further on, and that is, well, when you do statistics or you do any kind of database modeling, you also should remember to think systematically and clearly and a lot about not yet seen catastrophes. Things can happen in different ways, and they can be bad in different ways than you think, and you have to prepare for that. One more thing which was done in Norway was that there was a limit to aggregate exposure. So there was a law which said that windstorm insurance companies didn't have to pay more than, say, out 5 billion Norwegian crowns to cover windstorm losses. If the losses are bigger than that, well, then insured people will not get fully covered. I thought and think that's a good idea, because if you don't have those rules, the insurance companies will go bankrupt, and that's not good for anybody. But I've not heard of anybody but Norway to have this rule, but it's a sensible rule. So that was some conclusions. Then thinking again in a different direction about catastrophe risks, well, they are big, they happen only once. So you cannot just adjust and improve as experience is gained, and methods based on means variances, central limit theory have little meaning. And it's difficult to keep in mind that catastrophes can and will occur, like it's been difficult for Sweden to keep in mind that the an unpleasant flu virus like the coronavirus can and will occur. So Sweden hasn't kept enough equipment to handle this catastrophe. So these catastrophes, these catastrophic risks, they are always a gamble. And what we can contribute is to find the odds of the gamble. So how big are the risks? So the next page, page 24, tells you, gives some references to this. And in particular, it gives a reference to a paper we did after the next big windstorm, the Gudrun windstorm, and gives the explanation why this was much bigger than what was gotten from our analysis. And the explanation was that in the data there were no forest losses. The windstorms we had in the data set, there were no forest losses, and so they were not covered, and most of Gudrun's losses was windstorm losses. But the bright side of it was anyway that the analysis we did made Länsförsäkringar buy much more reinsurance, so Gudrun was not a problem for them. It was quite covered by their reinsurance money. Okay, so thank you.